Many of us have been reading the Bible, particularly the events leading up to the arrest and trial and crucifixion of Jesus Christ. And as we see things happening in the society around us, it was similar back then, especially about hypocrisy. Hypocrisy ruled the day, as it seems to be ruling the day even now. Many of the proceedings that occurred against Jesus Christ were highly irregular, broke a lot of the Jewish traditions and laws that had been set, their own laws. And so it's important that we look at that aspect of what Jesus Christ suffered. He suffered some irregularities. He knew what they were, according to what those man-made regulations were. But when we see of those regulations, we can gain a little bit more insight in how Christ allowed himself to suffer for us. So the title of the sermon is Christ's Irregular Trial. Irregular Trial. So let's begin by noticing the events that occurred before his arrest. And we find this beginning in Matthew 26, verse 3 to 5. Matthew 26. The chief priests and the scribes and the elders of the people assembled at the palace of the high priest, who was called Caiaphas. They plotted to take Jesus by trickery and kill him. So here was a discussion about what they wanted to do by trickery or by deceit. But they said, not during the feast, lest there be an uproar among the people. That's kind of hypocritical in one sense. We better do it at another time. We can't do it during the feast because the people won't like it. So they were contriving how they were going to arrest and take him and eventually kill him. So the plot was beginning to be set. Verse 14. One of the 12, called Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and said, "What are you willing to give me if I deliver him to you?" So he's looking for some money. He's looking for a reward. And they counted out to him 30 pieces of silver, which again was quite a large amount. So from that time, he, Judas, sought opportunity to betray him, looked for ways in which he could betray Jesus Christ. So you find he got involved, and Jesus knew that this was all in the works and all being planned. Notice verse 19. So the disciples did as Jesus had directed them, and they prepared the Passover. When evening had come, he sat down with the 12. And as they were eating, he said, "Assuredly, I say to you, one of you will betray me." And they were exceedingly sorrowful. And each one of them began to say to him, "Lord, is it I?" Each one. And he answered, he said, "He who dipped his hand with me in the dish will betray me. The Son of Man indeed goes just as it was written of him." Because there were prophecies of what Jesus Christ would go through. "But woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been good for that man if he had never been born." Then Judas, who was betraying him, remember he was seeking opportunity to betray him, answered and said, "Rabbi, is it I?" He knew what he was doing. Judas knew what he was doing. And Jesus knew it as well. And he said, "You have said it." Yeah, you said it. You said it. Let's now pick up the story in John 13. John 13. This is the evening of the Passover. It's after the foot washing. And he was troubled in spirit in verse 21, John 13, verse 21. And he said, "Most assuredly, I say to you, one of you will betray me." So it's the same evening here. And the disciples looked at one another, perplexed about whom he spoke. Who? Wondered who? And then verse 26, Jesus answered, "It is he to whom I give a piece of bread when I have dipped it." And having dipped the bread, he gave it to Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon. So here you have the fact that it became obvious that Judas was the one who was going to betray him. But notice verse 27 here. Verse 27. "Now after the piece of bread, Satan entered him." Satan, the devil, entered Judas. "Then Jesus said to him, 'What you do, do quickly.'" Now, he's addressing Judas. But who also is he addressing? Satan, who was in Judas. "What you do, do quickly." So no one at the table knew for what reason he said this to him. There were some speculations. Some thought he had the money, well, because he had the money box, that he should go out and get something for the poor. But he went out. He went out, and it was night, as it says in verse 30. Verse 31, "So when he had gone out, Jesus said, 'Now the Son of Man is glorified, and God is glorified in him.'" He knew that the stage was now set. We know later that he prayed fervently at least three times that this trial would pass from him. He knew that this was going to be absolutely horrific to go through. But he knew once Judas went out, the betrayal was going to take place. Satan had already entered him. Into Judas. So we now come to John 18, verse 1. John 18, verse 1. So this was after all the words that he spoke from John 13 to John 17, which we will cover a lot of those sayings on Thursday night. So when Jesus had spoken these words, he went out with his disciples over the brook Kidron, where there was a garden, and he and his disciples entered. Now along comes Judas, who betrayed him. He knew the place because Jesus often met there with his disciples. So here was this opportune time that he felt would be appropriate. Then Judas, having received a detachment of troops and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, came there with lanterns, torches, and weapons. We're talking about it's at night. And he had a detachment of these troops. It was sanctioned by the chief priests and the Pharisees. So let's continue. Verse 4, "Jesus, therefore, knowing all things would come upon him, went forward and said to them, whom are you seeking? See, he had already prayed. But once Judas came on the scene, he knew that this is the will of God that he goes through with the arrest, trial, and crucifixion. Who are you seeking? Whom are you seeking? And then they answered. And this is something before he answered. In the other Gospels, it says that Judas actually came up and kissed Christ. This was a betrayal by a friend who had been with him for 3.5 years, day in and day out, who turned on him. And so, notice verse 5. The ones there, the troop, they answered him. They said, "Jesus of Nazareth." And Jesus said to them, "I am he." Now, he is in italics. "I am." And Judas, who betrayed them, stood with him. And when he said to them, "I am he," they drew back and fell to the ground. Now, why would that be? Just consider what God said to Moses. When Moses asked God at the time of the burning bush, "Whom shall I say is God? What is your name?" "I am. I am." So when Jesus responded, "I am he," which could have been included there, and "I am," it affected them, the people. Everyone in that group should have recognized, "What am I doing?" There's the "I am" from the time of Moses, and now here is this person saying, "I am." And he asked them again, "Whom are you seeking?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." And so he said, "I have told you that I am." That's the third time, "I am he. Therefore, if you seek me, let these go their way." In other words, he's saying to that mob, "Let my disciples go. Let them just leave. You want me, but let these leave." That the saying might be fulfilled that she spoke, "Of those whom you gave me, I have lost none." Except, of course, we know the son of perdition, as it says in other of the gospel accounts. But none of his other disciples would have been taken and arrested with him, just Jesus Christ. So verse 12 now, we come to this arrest. The detachment of the troops and the captain and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him. And they led him away to Annas first, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year. So for some reason, these people, this mob, took them to the father-in-law, to Annas first, who apparently was retired because his son-in-law was the high priest. It was Caiaphas, though, who advised the Jews earlier that it was expedient that one should die for the people, kind of telling of what he said. And the Apostle John here refers to that statement that Caiaphas had made earlier. And that was back in John 11. And we know the story here that this arrest occurred through a paid traitor. The arrest was planned where there would be no crowds at night. We do not see any mention for his arrest. None whatsoever. So, in verse 19, Annas is asking him, high priest, and we know he was a high priest, and as we could see from secular history, he was retired at that time, asked Jesus, and notice what he asked him about, the disciples and his doctrine. So where's any accusation here? There isn't any. Just tell me about your disciples and your doctrine. So, what did Jesus answer? He said, I spoke openly to the world. I always taught in the synagogues and in the temple where the Jews always meet. And in secret I have said nothing that was of any importance to the understanding of the gospel message. We know that at times he spoke privately to the disciples, but meaning it was all open. I was there. You could hear me. The Jews all heard me. You all heard me say these things about the disciples and the doctrine. Why do you ask me? Ask those who heard me what I said to them. Indeed, they know what I said. They know. The people who heard me know. I was open and all what I talked about with the doctrine. Did he do anything wrong? Did Jesus do anything wrong here? No, he's just answering Annas. And he's saying, I've spoke about the disciples and my doctrine. When he had said these words, one of the officers who stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand. And that must have really hurt. You know, that does hurt when somebody is struck by the palm of your hand. Do you answer the high priest like that? Very accusatory. Why did this man strike him? What did Jesus do? There should have been some intervention here. Annas should have chided the man for hitting someone who had not been proven guilty. You answer the high priest that way? And Jesus said, if I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. But if well, why do you strike me? If I've done wrong, what was it that I did? And we know Christ never sinned. So what did Annas do? He sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. So you get a little bit more information here in John before we pick up the story later. And we'll be picking up the story in Mark 14. But here we have a private interrogation. Now, according to Jewish law, and that was law at that time, and we know they had their own traditions, that all legal proceedings were prohibited at night. You just couldn't have a proceeding at night. And the accused was never to be subjected to a private examination as he was here. So that's the first irregularity, that it happened at night and that it was private. It should not have occurred. It shouldn't have even occurred. Now, Jesus could have said, why are we meeting here right now? It's nighttime. But he didn't say that. All that Jesus was asked about was his doctrine and his disciples. There was no evil. Still, no charges have been produced. So Annas, more than likely, was frustrated and sent him now to Caiaphas. And we pick up in Mark 14, verse 53. Mark 14, verse 53. Then they led Jesus away to the high priest, and with him were assembled all the chief priests, the elders, and the scribes. So here you now have this large group with the high priest. But we know that, as it's said here, Peter follows him at a distance right into the courtyard, and he sat with the servants and warmed himself by the fire. This is still at night. The chief priests and the council sought testimony against Jesus to put him to death. They're seeking testimony. They didn't have it already. So here, we've got this guy. We want to put him to death. Now, who's going to give me a reason to put him to death? And we find that that was the one issue that they wanted to do, was put him to death. And that's important to note. They were gathered there to put him to death. This comes now to the second irregularity, according to Jewish tradition, that this trial should never have begun when it did. It began very early at nighttime on that day, the 14th, which was the day before the 15th. The 15th was a holy day. Remember, it's nighttime. You know, early morning. Before it was dark, you know, the rooster had not yet crowed. This trial was to find him guilty of death. So normally, any capital trial or capital nature of a trial could not start on a Friday or a day before a holy day. The reason being that a trial of capital punishment had to continue for another consecutive day. You could not put to death a person in one day. You needed 2 days, so that at night the council or the judges could think about it, about the seriousness of the matter. So it shouldn't have ever occurred, because the next day would have been Thursday, a holy day. They pushed it through. Remember, if they didn't do it then, it would have been done during the feast. And they had already determined, we can't do it during the feast because the people won't like it. So they're pushing this through, breaking their own traditions. They didn't want to rile the people. So that second irregularity is that this should not even have begun when it did. Now let's look at another irregularity, and we find this in verses 56 to 59. For many bore false witnesses against him. Many. But it says, their testimonies did not agree. So you get some people, and then they couldn't even remember or actually state what he said accurately, so you didn't have the witnesses agreeing with one another. Then some rose up and bore false witness against him, saying, well, we heard him say this, I'm going to destroy this temple made with hands, and within 3 days I will build another made without hands. That's what some of them said we heard him say. He said he's going to destroy the temple. Remember, it was 46 years in the making. He's going to destroy it and then build another one in 3 days. But note verse 59, not even then did their testimony agree. So they're listening to all these people coming forward, and there was no similarity in the responses. And so the third irregularity was that the testimonies were false. False testimonies. False witnesses, and they didn't agree. He was being accused by words that weren't true. I would say this is total hypocrisy. Total hypocrisy. Jesus could have called him out on that, but he didn't. This is what Jesus endured. He endured this hypocrisy. He could see it. By reading through this, we can see it so clearly here, what he had to endure. Now, we will come back to John, but where are we? We're in Mark. We'll come back to Mark a little later, but let's look now at John 2, verse 18, and see what Jesus Christ actually did say that these false witnesses couldn't even agree on. They didn't hear him right. They didn't understand what he was saying. So let's look at John 2, verse 18. John 2, verse 18. So the Jews answered and said to him, "What sign do you show us since you do these things?" And Jesus answered and said to them, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up." He didn't say he would destroy it. And the Jews said, "It's taken 46 years to build this temple, and you'll raise it up in 3 days?" But he was speaking of the temple of his body. Therefore, when he had risen from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said to them this to them, and they believed the scripture and the word that Jesus had said. That was what Jesus was referring to, his body, the same sign of Jonah, 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish. So Christ was being indicted on false charges that he would destroy the temple of God, and then he would rebuild it, and his words were being twisted. Notice the law, what was found in the law about witnesses. Notice Deuteronomy 19. Oh, I guess we should keep our place in Mark. Oh, well, we could always come back. But let's look at Deuteronomy 19 and look at the law. The law that wasn't applied. So, verse 15. "One witness shall not rise against a man concerning any iniquity or any sin that he commits. By the mouth of two or three witnesses, the matter shall be established." In other words, they would have to agree. "If a false witness rises against any man to testify against him of wrongdoing, then both men in the controversy shall stand before the Lord, before the priests and the judges who serve in those days. And the judges shall make careful inquiry." We don't see this happening, of a careful inquiry. "And indeed, if the witness is a false witness who has testified falsely against his brother, then you shall do to him as he thought to have done to his brother, and so you shall put away the evil from among you." Nothing happened to the false witnesses. They just were allowed to spout off and accuse Christ of destroying the temple. Again, they were searching for a reason why to put him to death. Now, let's go back to Mark 14. Mark 14, and we'll start now in verse 60. Mark 14, verse 60. "So the high priest stood up in the midst and asked Jesus, saying, 'Do you answer nothing? What is it these men testify against you?' He kept silent." He did not restate what he had told them earlier back in John 2. He didn't restate it. He answered nothing. And the high priest asked him, saying to him, "Are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed?" And Jesus said, "I am." Again, it goes back to what Moses heard from the Word, who later became Christ. I am. And you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the power and coming with the clouds of heaven. Well, that was it. That they went into hysterics. The high priest especially went into hysterics. And so, what was he being condemned on? A totally different matter. Not anything here about what he said about the temple. Notice how it switched. It switched from this whole discussion about the temple to now he claimed to be the Son of God. The I Am. So point number four, the fourth irregularity, was what it says in verse 63 and 64. The high priest tore his clothes and said, "What further need do we have witnesses? You have heard the blasphemy. What do you think?" And they all condemned him to be deserving of death. The whole council, everyone there, the mob, all condemned him. And this was the, there were two irregularities here, but the fourth one would have been that there was a change in the accusation and no other witnesses were called. And again, that change of accusation went from the destroying of the temple to blaspheming. And so, again, according to the tradition of Jewish law, that if a statement was made before a tribunal by the accused, it couldn't be used against him unless there were other witnesses to verify it prior to the court hearing it. In other words, they all heard it there, but somebody would have had to hear it as witnesses prior to coming into the court. And so when the high priest said, "We don't need any other witnesses," that went against their own law. They had to have witnesses who weren't part of that meeting at that point. So his testimony was proved to be blasphemous by the court alone, and not by any other witnesses. Notice, it was blasphemy. We do not see that Jesus Christ cursed God. We do not see that God's law or his spirit was cursed. He admitted to being the Christ. And he said that he was the Son of Man. But here the court didn't even get into that phrase, what was meant by the Son of Man. The Son of God, the Son of Man. They didn't delve in to what he had to say. They didn't seek to prove what he had just taught them. They just were so adamant to get him killed. The other irregularity is that the priest tore his clothes in verse 63. The priest tore his clothes. Let's look at Leviticus 21, verse 10. Leviticus 21, verse 10. You know, when there is mob rule, anything goes. Hypocrisy. And Christ saw it all. Hypocrisy. In verse 10, Leviticus 21, verse 10. "He who is the high priest among his brethren, on whose head the anointed oil was poured, and who is consecrated to wear the garments, shall not uncover his head, nor tear his clothes." And yet he did. He did. It was an emotional outburst. He persuaded others into contemning Christ. The high priest said, what do you all think? After he tore his clothes up, what do you all think? Oh, yeah, we hear you. They all condemned him to death. So you have these irregularities going on. And Jesus is noting it. The condemnation was swift. It was immediate. Now, we come to the sixth irregularity, and that is that we do not see a defense counsel given to him. Again, according to Jewish traditional law, there was supposed to be a Sanhedrin member, one of the council, who would serve as a defense counsel. Technically, since there's no defense counsel for this accused, the guilty verdict would have been invalid, and the sentence of death could not be carried out. And were all the council members in agreement? Were they all of one mind? Well, apparently not. Notice Luke 23. Luke 23 and verse 50. Luke 23 and verse 50. Now behold, there was a man named Joseph, a council member, a good and just man. He had not consented to their decision and deed. He didn't consent. He was from Arimathea, the city of the Jews, who himself was waiting for the kingdom of God. Here you have a loyal follower of Jesus Christ, and you don't hear him speaking up. Now, he may have, now, again, we're only getting the basic outline here of what occurred. We don't know all that was discussed at that time. He may have said something, but it's not recorded in the scripture. But not all the council was in favor, especially with Joseph of Arimathea, was not in agreement with that decision and deed. A mistrial, we would say. A mistrial was not fair at all. You know, we often hear, well, that's not fair. That's not fair. Well, Jesus could have said that numerous times that night. Not fair. This is not fair. This isn't right. But he didn't. Finally, we come to the last irregularity, and that is the Jews got the Romans involved. This is unheard of, that the Jews got the Romans involved. It was a mockery. Notice Luke 23, verse 1 and 2. The whole multitude of them arose and led him to Pilate. So they're all this angry mob from the high priest, and they began to accuse him, saying, we found this fellow blaspheming. It doesn't say that. We found this fellow perverting the nation, forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar, and saying that he himself is Christ, a king. What is this? No charges are brought here about the temple. No charges here are brought about his blasphemy. Now new charges are brought. New charges that would go against Roman law, because you do not talk about you talk against Caesar. You don't talk about setting yourself up as a king in place of Caesar. So here the Jewish mob was appealing to the Roman laws at this time. This is what this man has done. So the whole entire accusation against him got changed. What in the world? What in the world is this? why did the Jewish leaders bring this accusation up? It hadn't been brought up until now. Paying taxes, not paying taxes, would have been an assault to the Roman government at that time. Let's keep our place in Luke, and let's look at John 18, verse 28. They led Jesus from Caiaphas to the praetorium. And it was early morning. They themselves did not go into the praetorium, lest they be defiled, they may not eat the Passover. Here they were, again, this is so hypocritical. Oh, we can't go in there. We're going to be defiled. Well, you're accusing a man of false charges. You're accusing a man who did not blaspheme, and you're concerned about going in there because you might be defiled. I mean, this hypocrisy stunk to high heaven. I think when we look at it this way, we could see what Jesus experienced, and he understands what we face, what we see going on now, and what we could see going on later in the future. It's unbelievable. Pilate then went out to them and said, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" And they said to him, "If he were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him to you." Well, they didn't have any witnesses. And the fact that he was the I Am made them very angry. Oh, but he's an evildoer. And then Pilate said here, he said, "Well, you take him and judge him according to your law." And then the Jews said to him, "It is not lawful for us to put anyone to death." We'll get into that in a minute. Just keep that in mind. It's not lawful for us to put anyone to death, that the saying of Jesus might be fulfilled, which he spoke, signifying by what death he would die. All right. There are prophecies that Jesus would die by crucifixion. The Jewish leaders could not crucify anyone. They could stone someone to death, but they couldn't crucify. That was a Roman way of execution. So, according to the scriptures, Jesus was supposed to be crucified. Let's look at three of those scriptures, and they're all in John. Let's look at John 3. Verse 14, John 3, and in verse 14, "As Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life." And it's in the same context as verse 16. "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life." That serpent that was raised up in the wilderness was a type of what Jesus would suffer, a crucifixion where he would be raised up from the ground, you know, raised up to be hung on a tree, hung on a stake. All right, John 8. John 8, verse 28. John 8, verse 28. "Then Jesus said to them, 'When you lift up the Son of Man, then you will know that I am he, that I do nothing of myself, but as my Father taught me, I speak these things. And he who sent me is with me. The Father has not left me alone, for I always do those things that please him.'" When you lift up the Son of Man, you will know that I am. It's interesting how many of the I ams you find throughout the gospel accounts. Then let's look at John 12. John 12, verse 32. John 12, verse 32. And if I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all peoples to myself. This he said, signifying by what death he would die. The people were kind of confused. We have heard from the law that the Christ remains forever. How can you say the Son of Man must be lifted up? Who is this Son of Man? See, the council and the scribes and the Pharisees should have been asking that same question. Well, who is this Son of Man? And who is the Savior? But they didn't do that. If he had not been brought to the Romans, he could have been taken out and stoned to death. The Jews had that authority to do so. Remember what they wanted to do with the woman caught in adultery. What did they want to do to the woman caught in adultery? The crowd wanted to stone her to death. So they had some leeway in how they would get rid of what you would call evildoers. But as we said earlier, they could not carry out the capital punishment of crucifixion without the aid of the Romans. And that was what was so irregular about this particular trial. Now, there's some more irregularities because of the Romans being involved. The priests and the Levites really feared the people. So they trumped up these charges of treason against Rome, so that Rome had to deal with this. But Pilate is a little perceptive, not a little, I think he was quite perceptive here. He was noticing what was going on, and he was slow to be manipulated. Notice Luke 23. Again, keeping our place in John, because we'll come back to John. But Luke 23 now. And let's look at verse 3. Let's just put ourselves into that atmosphere at that time. Let's put ourselves kind of looking at this as history being played out. And we're watching a film of this all occurring. Luke 23, verse 3. Pilate asked him, saying, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And he answered and said, "It is as you say." So Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowd, "I find no fault in this man." Here was the Roman governor that did not find any fault, even though he said he was the king of the Jews. "I find no fault." But they were the more fierce. Now just picture that in your mind. The crowd is getting angrier and angrier and fierce in their expressions of hate. He stirs up the people. He's teaching throughout all Judea, beginning from Galilee to this place. What do you mean he's stirring up the people? What does that even mean? They just didn't like it of what was going on with what Jesus Christ was teaching. Now, when Pilate heard of Galilee, he asked if the man were a Galilean. As soon as he heard that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who was at Jerusalem at that time. Why was he at Jerusalem? The holy days. You know, the Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread were going to take place. That's why Herod was there. So when Herod saw Jesus, he was exceedingly glad. Not like the chief priests and the others who wanted to have him killed. Herod was glad. He had desired for a long time to see him because he had heard many things about him, and he had hoped to see some miracle done. He had heard that he had done miracles. And he questioned him with many words. What were those questions? Again, that's why I'm looking forward to these books written in the future. The Apostle John said at the end of his gospel that the world cannot contain all the words that Jesus spoke. I wonder what all was said here and what Herod was bringing out. He questioned him. And the chief priests and the scribes stood and vehemently accused him. So here you have Herod trying to have a discussion with Jesus. Jesus stayed silent. And you hear this crowd just constantly interrupting. Can you imagine the where's that coming from? Who's stirring it all up? None other than Satan. And his demons were stirring this all up. And then Herod, with his men of war, treated him with contempt and mocked him, arrayed him in a gorgeous robe, and then sent him back to Pilate. And here is another, it's ironic. That very day, Pilate and Herod became friends. They were enemies before. Pilate is the Roman governor. He represents Rome. Herod was the king and had nothing to do with each other. Well, they all become friends over this whole incident. Amazing story. So we go back now to, let me see, where are we? Verse 13. Okay. Verse 13 in Luke 23. Then Pilate, when he called the chief priests and the rulers and the people, he said, okay, you brought this man to me as one who misleads the people. And indeed, having examined him in your presence, I have found no fault in this man concerning those things of which you accuse him. Anything that was brought up earlier, whether it had been against the temple or blasphemy or about the tax issue or being a king, I don't find any fault. And neither did Herod. We both find him innocent. And indeed, nothing deserving of death. I will therefore chastise him and release him. For it was necessary for him to release one of them at the feast. And they cried out at once, saying, away with this man and release to us Barabbas. Again, picture this horrific anger. It's this mob mentality who had been thrown into prison for a certain rebellion made in the city and for murder. The law said that a murderer must die. Jesus died in place of all of us and Barabbas, who was a murderer and was deserving of death. It's kind of interesting when you think about all of that as well. So, let's continue here. Where are we? Verse 20. Pilate, therefore, wishing to release Jesus. How many times did he try to release him? Even his wife in one of the Gospels said, don't have anything to do with him. Stay away. Don't get involved. They shouted, crucify him, crucify him. And he said the third time, why? What evil has he done? I have found no reason in death for him. I will chastise him and let him go. And they were insistent, demanding with loud voices that he be crucified. And the voices of these men and the chief priests prevailed. And so Pilate gave sentence so that it should be done as requested. Let's go to John 19. John 19. Let's read the story here. John 19. And beginning in verse 4. Pilate went out again and said, "Behold, I am bringing him out to you that you may know that I find no fault in him." The Jews came out wearing Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, and Pilate said, "Behold the man." Therefore, when the chief priests and the officers saw him, they cried out, "Crucify him and crucify him." And Pilate said, "You take him and crucify him, for I find no fault in him." Now here is the hypocrisy. Again, another instance of hypocrisy. The Jews said, "We have a law, and according to our law, he ought to die because he made himself the Son of God." Not that he was the Son of God, not that he was the I Am. He made himself. He's the pretender. He made himself the Son of God. Then Pilate, when he heard this, was more afraid. More afraid. You know, when you read about Pilate from the scriptures, without any, let's say, outside, let's say, source material here, he had a dilemma going on at this time. He became afraid. And then he went into the praetorium and he said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" And Jesus gave him no answer. And Pilate said, "Are you not speaking to me? Do you know that I have power to crucify you and power to release you? Do you know that?" And Jesus said, "You could have no power at all against me unless it had been given you from above. Therefore, the one who delivered me to you has the greater sin." We know it was Judas, but who also delivered Jesus to Pilate? These fanatical leaders. From then on, Pilate sought to release him. I mean, looking at it from a viewpoint of what he was going through, what was he thinking? The Jews cried out, saying, "If you let this man go, you are not Caesar's friend. Whoever makes himself a king speaks against Caesar." Total hypocrisy. The Jews hated the Roman occupation. They wanted to be rid of Pilate and the Roman soldiers. They did not revere Caesar. They're threatening Pilate with loss of his office. So, "You're not Caesar's friend." And then when Pilate heard that, he brought Jesus out and sat down in the judgment seat. In that place it is called the pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbatha. It was the preparation of the Passover, about the sixth hour, and he said to the Jews, "Behold your king." And they cried out, "Away with him, away with him, crucify him." Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." Oh. You know how sometimes you get so frustrated when you hear of hypocrisy going on in the world around us? For them to say this was a total lie. And Jesus is hearing all of this. And just knowing a little bit more about this background, you could see the emotional anguish that he also was experiencing during this time. Then he delivered him to them to be crucified, and they took Jesus and led him away. So, an absolute mockery of justice. And Jesus had not sinned, not during his arrest, not during the secret proceedings. He did not sin before Herod and Pilate. And yet he endured the pain and the ridicule and the hypocrisy at its height. And he endured the scourging and crucifixion for all of us. So when we get discouraged from time to time, and the discouragement can hit us very quickly from time to time, let's remember what Christ went through for our sakes. And as a summary scripture here, in conclusion, we'll look at Hebrews 12. Let's look at Hebrews 12. Hebrews 12, verse 1. Hebrews 12, verse 1. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let's lay aside every weight and the sin that so easily ensnares us. Run with endurance the race that is set before us. And that's what we have to do. As we heard in the sermonette today about the need to make sure we're not allowing the leaven. This world is full of leaven. We've got to make sure it's not affecting us and it takes us away from God. So these days have a very deep meaning to us. We must run with endurance the race that's set before us. And who do we look to? We look to Jesus Christ, the author. He began the faith in us. He's going to finish our faith, who for the joy that was set before him, he knew what he was about to endure, and he endured the cross. He despising the shame. And where is he now? He has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. We follow what Jesus Christ did for us. We're not to be forgetful of what Jesus Christ did for us, and we follow his example, which he did, and that he did not have guile in his mouth. He did not respond in kind. And so, as we conclude, let's look at one other verse here, verse 28. Verse 28, because these are our responsibilities now. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, let's have grace by which we may serve God accountably, acceptably, with reverence and godly fear. So may all of us have a very inspiring and meaningful Passover this coming Thursday night.